Hi, Dave Emery here. This is For the Record, program number 836. The death of Alberto Niesman and the AMIA bombing. This is being recorded on February 20th of the year 2015. The suspicious death of an Argentine prosecutor named Alberto Niesman, last name M-I-S as in Sam, M-A-N as in Nancy, has garnered a fair amount of news coverage in recent weeks. He was found dead on January 19th of an allegedly self-inflicted gunshot wound. This took place after he had assumed the tortuous and apparently quite dangerous job of investigating the July 18th, 1994 bombing of the AMIA Jewish Cultural Center in Buenos Aires, Argentina. The investigation into that crime has been stalled. It also has evidentiary tributaries that run in numerous directions, many of those having to do with the underground Reich, either in Latin America and Argentina and or in the Middle East. There are also powerful evidentiary tributaries running in the direction of the Iran-Contra affair and international terrorism elsewhere in the world, among other things. It's the death of Alberto Niesman comes after he had expressed fear for his own life and fear for the safety of his 7-year-old and 15-year-old daughters. And it also came the day before he was to testify before the Argentine Congress, and he was about to return a warrant or indictment, as we would say in this country, against none other than Argentine President Kirchner. We will go into that at greater length and in greater detail later in the program. What we're going to do is to listen to a short segment, about maybe an 11 and a half minute segment of a For the Record program number 457. This was recorded in the late spring of 2004, and it deals with the three-border area or tri-border area in Latin America. The three borders are Paraguay, Argentina, and Brazil. And there is an area there which just about everything that is illegal goes on, from arms trafficking, the training of terrorists of various stripes, including Sunni and Shia, Islamic terrorism, and right-wing and fascist terrorism in Latin America and in North America, drug dealing, forging of passports, cigarette smuggling, stolen automobile smuggling, you name it, it goes on in the tri-border area. There are powerful evidentiary tributaries running between the tri-border area and the AMIA bombing, as well as between the tri-border area and the September 11th attacks as well. We're going to recap a section of For the Record program 457, again, from the late spring of 2004. And we're going to be accessing an article called Terrorism's New Geography. That was authored by Sebastian Junger, J-U-N-J-E-R, and it is from Vanity Fair's issue of December of 2002. And you're going to be hearing about a name that we spoke about at great length and For the Record 835. That was something of a prequel to this program. It is called Tangled Web, an overview of the AMIA bombing, and we looked at programs from the 1990s dealing with, among other things, Manzer and other individuals, a guy named Manzer Al-Kassar. He is a weapons trafficker and has supported numerous terrorist operations, including apparently the bombing of Pan Am 103 over Lockerbie, Scotland, the Achille Laurel hijacking, and he also is credited by the DEA with having imported roughly 20% of the heroin that came into the U.S. In the 1980s. And his activities, both as an arms supplier to terrorists and as a major heroin dealer, came while he was on the Reagan White House payroll working for Oliver North's Iran-Contra team. In the article you're about to hear, in addition to more highly suspicious botching of the investigation into the AMIA bombing, you're going to hear about President Carlos Menem of Argentina, who, along with Manzer Al-Kassar, along with another figure who crops up in connection with the investigation into the AMIA bombing, the late Alfredo Yebran, Y-A-B-R-A-N, and Carlos Menem's ex-wife and ex-sister-in-law, they are all from a tiny town called Yabrud, Y-A-B-R-U-D, Syria. And this is in Argentina. Argentina was going to sell a Condor missile, a powerful intermediate-range guided missile, and also a technology for a nuclear reactor to Syria. Under pressure from his good friend George H.W. Bush, Carlos Menem reneged on that deal and made a goodwill visit to Israel. Shortly after that, the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires was bombed in 1992, and then the AMIA bombing as well. One of the things that looms large in the investigation is what I call the Underground Reich, which has powerful elements both in the Middle East and also, obviously, Argentina. In the description for the record 836, there is a picture of Hezbollah cadre saluting, and they are giving, quite obviously, the Nazi salute. The Islamic culture, both Sunni and Shia, has nothing, no antecedents like the fascist salute, and they are quite obviously giving that salute. That is a classic case of a picture being worth a thousand words. So again, let's listen to a portion of For the Record Program 457 from the late spring of 2004. The article again, Terrorism's New Geography, by Sebastian Junger, Vanity Fair's issue of December of 2002.
Terrorism established itself beyond a doubt in Argentina in the early 1990s. Around 10 o'clock on the morning of July 18, 1994, a white Renault Trafic packed with 600 pounds of ammonium nitrate, a fertilizer, and fuel exploded next to the Argentine-Israeli Mutual Association in downtown Buenos Aires. The explosion was so powerful that it brought down most of the seven-story building. The driver, no one knows who he was, disappeared. 86 of the 100 or so people then in the building died in the blast. A woman who happened to be crossing the street just before the explosion had nearly been hit by the Renault van as it took the turn onto Calle Pasteur and recalled glaring at it but did not get a good look at the driver. She could not say whether he was old or young, Arab-looking or not. All she could say was that he had seemed to be alone. Terrorists had struck once before. 2 years earlier, a Ford F-100 truck loaded with the high-explosive Semtex had blown up in front of the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires and killed 29 people. The truck had been bought in Ciudad del Este with $100 bills reportedly traced to a currency exchange house in Lebanon that belonged to Manzer Al-Kassar, an infamous arms dealer. By the way, before we continue with the next section, which deals with Manzer Al-Kassar, some of his activities in Latin America, Al-Kassar is someone we've dealt with at great length in the past. We've looked at him in connection with the Iran-Contra operation. He was heavily involved both with securing East Bloc arms for use by the Contras and in securing American arms and weapons parts to be sent to the Iranians. Manzor El-Kassar, a very important fellow we've dealt with in RFA program number 32, 34, 35, and 38, as well as a number of For the Record programs, including programs number 109 and 330. Manzor El-Kassar has dealt with at great length in the book The Secret War Against the Jews by John Loftus and Mark Ahrens. Now, once again, about Manzor El-Kassar and his alleged connections to the AMIA bombing, something we looked at in FTR 109. Speaking of the F-100 truck used in the Israeli bombing, the bombing of the Israeli embassy in 1992, the truck had been bought in Ciudad del Este with $100 bills reportedly traced to a currency exchange house in Lebanon that belonged to Manzor El-Kassar, an infamous arms dealer. El-Kassar had extensive ties to the Syrian government and its intelligence apparatus and was suspected of a laundry list of illegal arms deals and terrorist acts, including the 1985 hijacking of the Achille Lauro cruise ship. He was also suspected of brokering a deal in 1989 between Argentinian President Carlos Menem and Syria, whereby the Syrians would make a $100 million campaign contribution to Menem in exchange for the sale of a nuclear reactor and an Argentinian missile system called Condor II. A bilateral pact between Syria and Iran tied both countries to the purchases. The Condor missile had a range of 1,000 kilometers and was widely considered to be superior to the Russian Scud missiles that were already available to Syria. Under heavy pressure from the United States, Menem, a close friend of the first President George Bush, who forced through a $300 million deal for Enron in Argentina, in which the company received huge tax breaks, made a goodwill visit to Israel and reneged on both the missile system and nuclear reactor sales. Critics accused him of pursuing a carnal relationship with the United States, and within months, terrorists had carried out the first of their two attacks. Menem is of Syrian descent and a controversial figure, one whom some believe to be anti-Semitic in a country known to have harbored Nazi war criminals. The scandalous accusations that swirled around him in the early to mid-1990s ranged from illegal arms trafficking to beating up his first wife, Zulima Yoma, in front of a visiting bank president to slipping a crocodile into her swimming pool. Not to be outdone, Yoma was filmed by a television crew physically expelling her husband from the presidential palace. An army assault team was required to reinstall him. When Menem's son Carlos Jr. was 10 years old, he put a loaded pistol to his father's head and threatened to pull the trigger if Menem didn't stop beating his mother. In 1995, Carlos Jr. was killed in a mysterious helicopter crash. Before we continue with the trials and tribulations of the Menem family, again, we've dealt with these bombings at considerable length in past broadcasts. FTR 109, in particular, goes into Manzor El-Kassar and Yomagate, as it was known, and the AMIA bombing. One of the things to note is that Carlos Menem, Manzor El-Kassar, Amira Yoma, Menem's ex-wife, her brother, and also a key Argentinian intelligence operative who was in charge of an area where some of the explosives and other materials used in the AMIA bombing were staged, were all from the same tiny town in Syria, Yabrud, Syria. And bear in mind, we're talking about things that were going on in Argentina. So this is some very, very significant networking indeed. And again, Manzor El-Kassar, a man with more connections than a switchboard, as I like to say, was a principal player in the Iran-Contra affair as well. Now, about Carlos Menem and the death of his son Carlos. In 1995, Carlos Jr. was killed in a mysterious helicopter crash. Many Argentinians are convinced that the helicopter was shot down as an act of revenge, possibly for reneging on the deal with Syria and Iran. To no one's surprise, the investigation into the bombing of the Argentine-Israeli Mutual Association, known by its Spanish acronym AMIA, was bungled from the start. The crime scene was trampled by the police, rescuers, and the simply curious, and nearly all the physical evidence, including body parts of the victims, were collected in plastic bags and dropped off at an open-air dump. 3 years later, the bags were dug up and thrown into the Rio de la Plata. Nevertheless, some progress was made in the case, though in the hall of mirrors that is Argentinian politics, it was hard to tell who was a villain and who was a scapegoat. Investigators traced the white van used in the attack to Police Commissioner Juan José Rebele, who for years had been suspected of using his position to run an extremely lucrative side business trafficking stolen cars to Paraguay. Investigators soon discovered that Rebele had received a $2.5 million payment from an unknown source, possibly as a payoff for the crime or for taking the fall. Rebele claimed it was an inheritance. And 66 recordings from police wiretaps of a Rebele associate mysteriously disappeared during the investigation. In the end, 14 more policemen and 4 of their associates were arrested for the bombing. Parenthetically here, before we continue, a major connection that is to be considered in connection with the networking between Islamist terrorists and neo-Nazi and white supremacist terrorists in the United States and elsewhere concerns one of the items that we talked about in For the Record program number 109. We came back to it in FTR 330, and that is the FBI's finding that a number of the police personnel who were implicated in the AMIA bombing were members of an Argentinian cell of a white supremacist organization based in the United States called White Aryan Resistance. That organization was headed up by Tom Metzger. It included white supremacist Dennis Mahone. And it is more than a little interesting to see Argentinian personnel, police personnel, implicated in AMIA belonging to a cell of White Aryan Resistance. It has been reported by some that Timothy McVeigh had belonged to White Aryan Resistance for a time. Certainly Dennis Mahone was involved with that particular operation. His name also crops up in connection with the Oklahoma City investigation. Continuing. And it got even stranger. 15 days before the AMIA bombing, it turned out, a shadowy Brazilian named Wilson dos Santos had visited the Argentinian consulate in Milan and tried to warn officials of the upcoming attack. His girlfriend was part of the terror cell that had carried out the embassy attack in 92, he said, and they had another attack planned for a building in Buenos Aires that was, quote, under construction, unquote, the AMIA building. The Argentinian diplomats dismissed him out of hand, but after the attack he was quickly found in Brazil by none other than Mario Aguilar Ricci, who had also had advanced warning of the attacks from his own sources. Ricci had just been cleared of kidnapping charges and had been released from prison. While in jail, Ricci says he wrote numerous letters to Argentina's then Interior Minister, Carlos Corach, as well as to a federal judge, explaining that he had deep sources in terrorist cells in Argentina, Paraguay, and Brazil, and that these cells were planning a devastating attack on the AMIA building. He was ignored, the attack occurred, and as soon as Ricci was released from prison, he tracked down Dos Santos. In Brazil, he videotaped himself with Dos Santos, who made a brief statement that he was returning to Buenos Aires to tell the truth. According to Ricci, Dos Santos had agreed to testify as long as his identity was not revealed. But in Buenos Aires, as soon as he made his statement to the presiding judge, Juan José Galeano, his name and photograph were leaked to the press. Dos Santos immediately recanted everything, explaining that the AMIA warning had simply been a lucky guess. Judge Claudio Bonadio threw him in jail to await trial for perjury charges. The investigation, or cover-up, blundered along for years. Its most vocal critic was the number two investigator in the case, Claudio Lifschitz. 2.5 years into the investigation, Lifschitz quit in disgust and wrote a book called AMIA, Why the Investigation Was Made to Fail. It alleged that the entire probe had been compromised in an effort by President Menem to cover up his ties to Syria and Iran. The two bombings went unsolved for years, but support for Lifschitz's accusations emerged suddenly last July when the New York Times and the Washington Post reported that a former Iranian intelligence officer, using the name Abolghasem Mezbahi and otherwise known as Witness C, had testified to Argentinian investigators that the 1992 embassy bombing was planned by a diplomat at the Iranian embassy in Buenos Aires and supervised by a senior Iranian intelligence officer. Months after the bombing, Mezbahi said, an emissary from Menem flew to Tehran to accept a $10 million payoff to cover up the first bombing, as well as any, quote, future, unquote, acts of terrorism. The money, according to Mezbahi, was deposited in a numbered Swiss bank account controlled by Menem, a fact later confirmed by Swiss investigators.
That again from For the Record program number 457, recorded in the late spring of 2004. The article itself from the article Terrorism's New Geography by Sebastian Junger from Vanity Fair's issue of December of 2002. And as if the many strands of the tangled web of the AMIA bombing were not complicated and sinister enough, those as described in For the Record 835. Just consider some of the elements and individuals that figure in that concatenation that was just laid out there. Now, the balance of this program is going to deal with the violent death of a man named Alberto Nisman, N-I-S, N as in Nancy, I-S as in Sam, M as in Mary, A-N as in Nancy. He was the prosecutor slash investigator in charge of the AMIA bombing for the last 10 years. And on January 18th, he was found shot to death basically he had died of a single gunshot wound to the head. There was a small 22 caliber Bersa pistol, that's capital B-E-R-S-A, found next to the body. And we're going to describe the physical circumstances and some of the things that were going on in a series of articles that I am going to read. First of all, his death came after he expressed fear for his life. He even was afraid of the Argentine security officials who were charged with his personal safety. Recall that a number of Argentine security police were charged with being involved at the operational level of the AMIA bombing, and some of them belonged to the White Aryan Resistance Organization of American White Supremacist Tom Metzger. We looked at that last week. The aforementioned and late Alberto Nisman also expressed fear not only for his own life, but for the safety of his two daughters, aged 7 and 15. The day after he was found dead, he was going to be testifying before the Argentine Congress about his investigation, and he was about to indict President Kirchner of Argentina for allegedly engaging in a willful cover-up of the AMIA bombing. We're going to hear about a number of things in connection with this. You're going to hear about how the DNA of a second person was found in Nisman's apartment. To date, there has been no identification of who that second individual may have been. Note that Nisman did not own the weapon that apparently took his life. It was lent to him by a friend. Nisman himself did own two guns. It is unclear why he wanted to borrow a weapon. Perhaps those guns were either rifles and or shotguns. He certainly could not have taken them with him as he went about his appointed rounds. He could, however, if he did want to commit suicide, certainly could have used those to kill himself. I would note that the behavior of the Argentine security officials who showed up at his apartment leaves a number of questions unanswered. They engaged in some apparently contradictory and, to some ways of thinking, suspicious behavior, according to a woman who lived near Nisman. That particular woman expressed fear for her own life for talking about the suspicious circumstances surrounding the handling of Nisman's corpse. And this also after the charred body of a woman was found near Niesman's apartment, diagonally apparently across the street from where Niesman had lived. This may have been some sort of grim warning either to that woman or to anyone else that pursuing the investigation could prove as bad for their health as it did apparently for Alberto Niesman's. Again, he expressed fear for his own life and fear for the safety of his two young daughters. Now, about the death. We're going to start with the New York Times article from January 19th of 2015. Puzzling death of a prosecutor grips Argentina. This is by Jonathan Gilbert, G-I-L-B-E-R-T, and Simon Romero, R-O-M-E-R-O, reads in part. Police sentries guarded the federal prosecutor's luxury high-rise building. His door on the 13th floor had been locked from the inside, and a gun with a spent cartridge was found on the floor near his body. There was no suicide note. Just one day earlier, on Saturday, the prosecutor, Alberto Niesman, said, quote, "I might get out of this dead," unquote. From the moment 10 years ago when he was assigned to investigate the 1994 suicide bombing of a Jewish center here that left 85 people dead, Mr. Niesman, an even-keeled lawyer, became entangled in a labyrinthine plot that he traced to Iran and its militant Lebanese ally, Hezbollah. But it was only in the past week that Mr. Niesman, 51, leveled explosive accusations that top Argentine officials, including President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, K-I-R-C-H-N-E-R, had conspired with Iran to cover up responsibility for the bombing as part of a deal that would supply Iranian oil to Argentina in exchange for Argentine grain. Now, the mystery has deepened with the discovery of Mr. Niesman's body on Sunday, the day before he was to testify before lawmakers about those accusations. The timing of his death and the outrage and skepticism it provoked in Argentina and elsewhere raised a torrent of new questions about an unresolved case that many here call a national disgrace. The latest turn is convulsing Argentina's political establishment over whether the country's acutely politicized institutions can ever prosecute those responsible for the bombing, one of the deadliest anti-Semitic attacks since World War II. This has turned into an attack on the credibility of the fundamental institutions of the Republic, unquote, said Santiago Kovadloff, K-O-V-A-D-L-O-F-F, an essayist and columnist for the newspaper La Nación. Officials in Ms. Kirchner's government were quick to assert that Mr. Niesman appeared to have killed himself. The security minister, Sergio Berni, B-E-R-N-I, said evidence at the scene, including a .22-caliber pistol and spent cartridge found near Mr. Niesman's body, indicate suicide. Autopsy results announced later said he had died of a bullet wound to the head. The bullet was almost definitely fired from the Bursa pistol that lay next to his body, according to an unidentified police official quoted by Telam, T-E-L-A-M, the state news agency. The government's National Firearms Registry also said that Mr. Niesman had two guns registered in his name. It was unclear whether the Bursa was one of them. Another line of investigation, Telam reported, was that the gun may have been lent by a friend to Mr. Niesman. News of his death immediately prompted doubts and questions from the political opposition and leaders of Argentina's Jewish community, Latin America's largest, with an estimated 250,000 people. Everything is far more sordid than it appears, said Elisa Carrió, C-A-R-R-I-O, an outspoken congresswoman. They killed him, or else they induced his death, unquote. On Twitter, Rabbi Sergio Bergman, B-E-R-G-M-A-N, the congressman, called Mr. Nisman victim 86 of the AMIA attack, using the Argentine acronym for the Argentina-Israelite Mutual Association, the destroyed Jewish community center. By the way, parenthetically, it was also a repository for records about Nazi war criminals who had escaped to Argentina. And that may have been one of the motivations in the attack. Continuing, Mr. Nisman, who had been selected to investigate the bombing by Nestor Kirchner, Argentina's former president and Mrs. Kirchner's late husband, had been expected at the hearing to explain the criminal complaint he filed last week against Mrs. Kirchner, as well as her foreign minister, Hector Timerman, T-I-M-E-R-M-A-N, and others. On Sunday afternoon, the officers assigned to guard Mr. Nisman were concerned because they had been unable to contact him by telephone, and his Sunday newspaper still lay outside his apartment. They called his family, but his mother was unable to open the apartment door with a spare key because a key was stuck in the lock on the other side. A locksmith was called, and Mr. Nisman's mother entered the apartment with the officers. The prosecutor investigating Mr. Nisman's death, Viviana Fein, F-E-I-N, told reporters on Monday morning that there were no witnesses and no suicide note. She said that she was awaiting evidence that included closed-circuit television footage and a list of phone calls. She also said that Mr. Nisman had not eaten dinner on Sunday night. Ms. Fein emphasized that it remained unclear whether Mr. Nisman had killed himself. In comments broadcast on Argentine radio, she said that the gun found at his side may not have been his and that investigators were reviewing his phone records and text messages to determine if he had been receiving threats. We cannot say that this case is solved, Ms. Fein said. After years of inquiry into the 1994 attack, marred by delays and corruption charges, Mr. Nisman seemed to bring new vigor to the investigation after taking over in 2005. He accused Hezbollah of having carried out the bombing and senior Iranian officials of having planned and financed it, accusations that Hezbollah and Iran's government have long denied. The charges put a deep chill on relations between the two countries until 2013, when they reached an agreement to investigate the attack. The president did not comment on Mr. Nisman's death, but Anabel Fernandez, a top official at the presidency, was quoted by Argentine news media as saying he believed Mr. Nisman had killed himself. Declaring that he was stupefied, unquote, Mr. Fernandez also sought to assure that the investigation into the bombing would not be undermined if Mr. Nisman had filed his years of findings properly. Mr. Nisman seemed to have dropped an oddly prophetic hint last Wednesday, telling a TV interviewer, quote, "With Nisman around or not, the evidence is there," unquote. He disclosed last week that he had obtained intercepts of telephone calls between Argentine intelligence agents and Iranian officials in which details of the secret deal were discussed. He accused Ms. Kirchner of directly ordering a covert team of negotiators to make an offer, quote, from the shadows, unquote, to Iran. In return, Mr. Nisman said, Argentina guaranteed immunity to former Iranian government officials in an effort to obtain Iranian oil to ease Argentina's energy shortage. By the way, Iran was also going to be getting Argentine grain. Continuing, pointing to delays that have long shrouded the investigation and to the endemic pressuring of judges and prosecutors here, the political opposition demanded a transparent and speedy inquiry into his death. Skipping down. The agreement between Iran and Argentina was also ruled an unconstitutional overreach of the executive branch by a local court last year. And our next story is going to talk about how after Nisman was found dead, the president of Argentina, again, Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner, began openly attacking the dead man and also referring to his death as a suicide or as The evidence is not certainly conclusive. Again, from the New York Times of the following day, January 20th of 2015, another article by Jonathan Gilbert, G-I-L-B-E-R-T, and Simon Romero, Argentine leader criticizes dead official. This reads in part, Facing a public outcry over the mysterious death of Alberto Nisman, the prosecutor leading the investigation into the 1994 bombing of a Jewish community, center here, President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner and her allies lashed out at the dead man on Tuesday, questioning whether he had allied himself with forces seeking to weaken her government. In a rambling 2,100-word letter posted on her Facebook page, Ms. Kirchner, whom Mr. Nisman had accused of orchestrating a cover-up to protect Iranian officials implicated in the bombing in exchange for Iranian oil, said that Mr. Nisman had been part of an effort to sidetrack, lie, cover up, and confuse, unquote, attempts to finally resolve the case. The attacks on Mr. Nisman after his death, including assertions in the state-controlled news media that he had been manipulated by Antonio Stiusso, S-T-I-U-S-S-O, a former intelligence official ousted last month by Mrs. Kirchner, raised questions here on whether her government was supporting efforts to determine the cause of his death. Instead of offering a position on the institutional turbulence and protests, the presidency put itself in the role of detective, unquote, said Carlos Pagni, P-A-G-M-I, a columnist for the newspaper La Nación, questioning why Mrs. Kirchner would scrutinize Mr. Nisman's travel itinerary and refer to newspaper headlines that were critical of her. Ms. Kirchner did not elaborate on why she had referred in her letter to Mr. Nisman's death as a suicide, an assessment echoed by her top aides and political supporters. Some of Ms. Kirchner's opponents say Mr. Nisman, 51, might have been murdered at his apartment on Sunday. He was to testify before Congress on Monday about his findings. Nisman had accused senior Iranian officials of plotting the 1994 bombing and Hezbollah, Iran's Lebanese ally, of carrying it out. He is charged that Mrs. Kirchner and her foreign minister, Hector Timmerman, had later promised to absolve former Iranian officials accused of masterminding the attack, which killed 85 people, as part of efforts to obtain Iranian oil to ease Argentina's energy shortage. The prosecutor investigating Mr. Nisman's death, the latest twist in the long inquiry into the bombing, said on Tuesday that no traces of gunpowder residue had been detected on his fingers, bolstering suspicions among some here that he had been killed by someone else. But the prosecutor, Viviana Fine, emphasized that she had been told that the barrel of a .22-caliber Bursa pistol, which was found next to Mr. Nisman's body, was probably too small to leave residue. The authorities said it had been borrowed from a friend. International ballistic experts agreed that, unlike a revolver, the Bursa might not have left traces of gunpowder. Quote, "For investigative purposes, this might raise a flag, but you cannot conclusively say he didn't fire the gun," said Ronald L. Singer, S-I-N-G-E-R, a forensic scientist and the technical and administrative director of the Tarrant County Medical Examiner's Office in Fort Worth. The presence of the security minister, Sergio Berni, B-E-R-N-I, at Mr. Nisman's apartment after the body was discovered in the bathroom on Sunday has also raised questions about possible government interference. This last statement again. The presence of the security minister, Sergio Berni, at Mr. Nisman's apartment after the body was discovered in the bathroom on Sunday night has also raised questions about possible government interference. Mr. Berni said in the television interview on Tuesday evening that he had not entered the bathroom and had made efforts to protect evidence, skipping down. Jorge Capitanich, C-A-P-I-T-A-N-I-C-H, Mrs. Kirchner's cabinet chief, said investigators need to verify whether Mr. Nisman had received threats from, quote, current, displaced, or foreign, unquote, intelligence agents. And again, note that he had drafted a warrant to arrest Argentine President Kirchner. This is from the TPN LiveWire blog of February 3rd of 2015. It's by Dylan Scott, S-C-O-T-T. Dead prosecutor had drafted warrant to arrest Argentina's president. The Argentinian prosecutor, whose death has sparked widespread protests, had drafted an arrest warrant for the country's president prior to his death, the New York Times reported Tuesday. Prosecutor Alberto Nisman had been investigating the 1994 bombing of the Argentina-Israelite Mutual Association, which killed 85 people, and whether the government of President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner had protected Iranian officials from being prosecuted for the bombing in exchange for Iranian oil. Nisman was killed by a gunshot to the head at his apartment on January 18th, the day before he was scheduled to speak to the country's Congress about his findings. Now, investigators say they found a drafted arrest warrant for Kirchner and other top Argentinian officials in the garbage at Nisman's apartment. The warrants alleged that Kirchner had tried to protect Iranian officials from being arrested and charged for the Jewish Center bombing, according to the New York Times. And again, note that Nisman had even expressed fear of the very guards who were charged with protecting him. This is from Yahoo News of January 28th of 2015. It's an Agence France-Presse story by Yosefa, J-O-S-E-F-A, Suarez, S-U-A-R-E-Z. Dead Argentine prosecutor wary even of his guards, and this reads in part. The prosecutor whose suspicious death set up a crisis for Argentina President Cristina Kirchner no longer trusted even his bodyguards at the violent end of his life, an assistant said Wednesday. A tense Diego Lago Marcino, L-A-G-O-M-A-R-S-I-N-O, his voice breaking at times, recounted at a news conference in Buenos Aires how Alberto Nisman had pleaded to be given the .22 caliber revolver that was used to put a bullet through his head. Who pulled the trigger is not clear. And this says it's a .22 caliber revolver. Again, I would not say definitively, but revolvers, that might very well have left residue. We don't know. Continuing, Nisman's security chief has been suspended and is under investigation along with two other members of his guard detail, a court source said. The 51-year-old prosecutor was found dead at his home on January 18th, a day before he was to go before a congressional committee to make a bombshell accusation that Kirchner shielded Iranian officials implicated in the 1994 bombing of a Jewish charities office known as AMIA. Vago Marcino, a computer expert and the last person known to have seen Nisman alive, said the prosecutor was desperate for the gun, saying, quote, "I no longer trust even my guards," unquote, skipping down. According to Lago Marcino, Nisman told him that as well as his own safety, he also feared for that of his two daughters, who are 7 and 15 years old and who were on vacation in Spain at the time. "Do you know what it is like that your daughters don't want to be with you because they're afraid something will happen to them," unquote, Lago Marcino quoted Nisman as saying, and skipping down again. After Nisman's death, Lago Marcino was charged with giving a firearm to someone other than its registered owner. He is the only person to be charged so far in the murky case. On Monday, Kirchner, 61, announced plans to disband Argentina's intelligence office and replace it with a new federal intelligence agency, skipping down. Ruben Benitez, a Nisman confidant who had been suspended, coordinated a security team of 10 officers who protected the prosecutor. According to a leaked statement made to the investigation's head prosecutor, Benitez said he advised Nisman against buying a gun just days before his death. But the suspended officers have come under scrutiny for contradictory statements to the investigating prosecutor, Viviana fine. And again, note those contradictory statements. Later on, we're going to hear about some rather suspicious behavior. As I mentioned earlier in the program, the DNA of a second unidentified person was found at the site, found in Niesmann's apartment. This is a Reuters story from NBC News of February 10th of 2015. Argentina, DNA from second person found in dead prosecutor's case, and it reads in part, forensic experts in Argentina have found DNA evidence of a second person in the apartment where an Argentine prosecutor was found dead last month in a case that has shaken the country. Alberto Niesmann was found in his bathroom on January 18th, a bullet in his head and a pistol by his side. He had been scheduled to bring a case to Congress the next day, accusing President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner of trying to derail the criminal investigation into possible Iranian involvement in the bombing that killed 85 people in a Jewish community center. The judge in the case filed court papers saying a sample, quote, corresponding to a genetic profile different from Niesmann's, unquote, had been found. Until Tuesday, there had been no evidence of anyone else in Niesmann's apartment. Skipping down again, the next big step in the investigation is expected to be testimony by former Argentine master spy Antonio Stiusso, again Stiusso, who was fired by the president in December. The government says Stiusso manipulated Niesmann into leveling the conspiracy accusation against President Kirchner in reprisal for his firing. And we're also going to take a look at some allegedly suspicious behavior by the Argentine security people who handled Niesmann's body on the evening of that he was found dead. And also note that diagonally across the street from his apartment, a woman was found, the charred dead body of a woman was found, and the woman who related for journalists the strange and apparently contradictory behavior of the Argentine security people handling Niesmann's body expressed fear for her own life. One wonders if perhaps the charred body was placed across the street as a warning either to this woman and or someone else that basically, hey, keep your mouth shut or you can become an unexplained death yourself. This is from the Breitbart blog, Breitbart, of February 17th of 2015. By the way, I would issue a very, very, very strong caveat about Breitbart. It is part of the Walking Dead zombie landscape of the American far-right journalistic community. Normally, I would give them a wide berth. I don't offhand see any particular ideological axe for them to grind in this case, so I think this can be viewed as reasonably credible. However, one should exercise the strongest caution about using Breitbart. Again, it is one of the it's an element of the Walking Dead of the American journalistic right-wing landscape. That having been said, this is from Breitbart, Breitbart, of February 17th of 2015, an article by Francis, Frances, Martel, Martel. Argentina, witness lives in fear, unquote, after charred body found across from dead prosecutor's apartment. As Argentine investigators attempt to uncover the mystery behind the death of prosecutor Alberto Niesmann, a new wrinkle has appeared in the investigation. The body of an unidentified middle-aged woman deposited and burnt across the street from Niesmann's apartment. Neighbors called the police around 3 a.m. on Monday, citing a large fire that had been found in an electrical room at a power station. As the fire was near a power station, authorities expected to find an electrical fire, but instead found an unidentified body and a container labeled ethyl alcohol, indicating that the body had been deliberately set on fire. Argentine newspaper Clarín, C-L-A-R-I-N, reports that the woman's body was found to be drenched in a combustible, and witnesses stated that they did not hear any voices or signs of conflict, indicating that she may have already been dead when brought to the street across from Le Parc apartment complex that was once home to Nisman. Authorities first reported that the woman had been electrocuted given her body's proximity to the electrical station, but later recanted that hypothesis as the cause of death. The Clarín reports police have proposed two hypotheses: that the woman set herself on fire, thus eliminating the possibility of conflict and explaining why neighbors did not hear any screams, or she had been killed elsewhere and her body merely disposed of at the location. If the body was disposed there after she was killed, it was perhaps to send a message. Authorities say it may take weeks to conduct DNA testing and identify both the woman and the cause of her death. In the interim, those involved in the investigation into Nisman's death have expressed deep concern. Nisman was found with a gunshot wound to his forehead in his home on January 18th, the day before he was to present before the Argentine Congress a report claiming that President Cristina Fernandez de Kirchner had conspired with the Iranian government and Hezbollah to protect the terrorists responsible for the 1995 bombing of the Argentine-Israeli Mutual Association, or AMIA, the deadliest terrorist attack in Argentina's history. His death was initially ruled a suicide, but investigators later opened the case up for further investigation after Fernandez de Kirchner herself said in a blog post she believed Nisman was killed by nefarious characters attempting to smear her name. Prosecutors have since taken up Nisman's mantle, and Fernandez de Kirchner has been formally charged with working to protect known terrorists in order to secure favorable gas prices from the Islamic Republic of Iran. The president's term concludes at the end of this year, and with it, her possession of executive immunity. The Argentine court system must now determine whether they will pursue the case against Fernandez de Kirchner and her foreign minister, Hector Timmerman. At least one witness involved in the Nisman investigation has said she is concerned for her own safety and is demanding law enforcement issue for her extra protection. At least one witness involved in the Nisman investigation said she is concerned for her safety and is demanding law enforcement issue her extra protection. Natalia Jimenez, G-I-M-A-N-A, Fernandez was leaving her job as a waitress in the neighborhood the night Nisman was found dead. Having walked by the Le Parc complex, she claims police interviewed her, and during the process, she observed a number of disturbing irregularities with the proceedings. When we were sitting at the stairs, they brought the street stretcher in that they, beginning again, when we were sitting at the stairs, they brought the stretcher and in, they brought, there's a misprint, that's the problem, they brought the stretcher that they took away the body of Alberto Nisman in. It was about 3:30 a.m. He was wrapped in a black sack. They took him to the right, but 15 minutes later, they put him back again, and they took him to the left, she claims. The men, she claims, were laughing as they moved the body. She also claims she was offered coffee, which she was told was made in Nisman's Nespresso coffee pot. Prosecutor Viviana Fine, who was in charge of the Nisman investigation and was identified as being on the scene by Fernandez herself, has dismissed the young woman's claims as ridiculous, unquote, and rejected them as admissible evidence in the investigation. Nonetheless, Fernandez tells Clarín that she fears for her safety. Quote, I am scared and would like some type of protection. I live in fear. unquote. And again, she observed what she relates as very strange behavior by the Argentine security personnel who were handling Nisman's body. According to her, they wrapped him up in a black sack. They took him out to the right, and 15 minutes later, they put the body back again and took him to the left. She claims they were laughing and offered her coffee from Nisman's own coffee pot. And I would note that the prosecutor investigating, perhaps that belongs in quotes, Nisman's death, who was identified as being on the scene by Fernandez herself, has dismissed that woman's claims as ridiculous. Nonetheless, she remains in fear. And again, thinking about the woman's body that was found charred right across the street from Nisman's apartment, that certainly is chilling and may have been a warning. I would also note that they are dismissing, they said that basically if she had set herself on fire, that would explain why no screams were heard. Well, if she set herself on fire, she might still very well be screaming. That does not make a lot of sense. So again, this is a highly suspicious case. There are so many evidentiary tributaries running, for example, in the direction of Iran and Hezbollah and Islamic terrorism, also in the direction of the far right and explicitly fascist elements in Argentina. I would note that Iran and other Middle Eastern countries have also been repositories for the underground Reich. The late Ayatollah Khomeini of Iran, who founded the Islamic Republic there, had his expenses while he was in Paris paid for by the underground Reich, specifically by François Janoux, heir to the political last will and testament and collective literary works of Adolf Hitler, Martin Bormann, and Joseph Goebbels. I would also note the Nixed deal to sell Condor missiles and a nuclear reactor to Syria. After that deal was quashed, and after Carlos Menem made a goodwill visit to Israel, both the 1992 bombing of the Israeli embassy in Buenos Aires and the AMIA bombing followed shortly. The money alleged to have been laundered to help pay for the embassy bombing was alleged to have been laundered through a Manzer El-Kassar subsidiary. In For the Record 155, we spoke about the Bormann Capital Network and their working to sell Condor missiles to Saddam Hussein in Iraq. So an underground Reich entity, perhaps with tentacles in the Muslim and Arab world and also in Argentina, may very well have been the executive authority in this case. Again, there are so many evidentiary tributaries, including running in the direction of the Iran-Contra affair, that I would be willing to bet there will be no precise determination of authorship for the 1994 bombing. There are long article-length descriptions of each For the Record program up on the SpitfireList.com website. This is sort of a hybrid media form. It's meant to be read as well as listened to. So please go to the SpitfireList.com website to access the description for this program. This concludes For the Record program number 836, the death of Alberto Nisman and the AMIA bombing, being recorded on February 20th of the year 2015. I'm Dave Emery. Ciao.